misty mountains cold.
Is this that Hobbit shit?
Welcome to That Hobbit Shit. I'm Mike.
I'm Corey.
Hey, Corey. Which chapter are we talking about today?
Mike, you cart with no wheels. We're not talking about a chapter. We're talking about episode 4 of The Rings of Pu'er. I was supposed to stop calling it that.
No, we still can. Even more so now. Anyway, before we talk about it, should we head off to the Green Dragon Inn?
I think that is proper.
Wait, should it be the Green Dragon Inn or should it be the Guild Pub?
The abandoned tavern in town?
Yeah, the Green Dragon Inn. Let's go.
But the only food for the brave and true comes from that Green Dragon.
Hey, Corey.
Oh, Mike, you're here.
Welcome to the Green Dragon Inn, where we discuss the beers we're drinking during this episode. Corey, what are you sipping on?
Okay, Mike, I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but do you recall what the dwarves discovered in this episode?
Mithril.
Well, Mike, I'm drinking Mithras.
No, you're not.
Yeah, it's called Mithras. It is a nectarine sassafras cider, and I honestly don't know what sassafras is. I think it's a herb. It's a cider made with nectarines.
Whoa.
It's pretty good. It is from Revel Cider, which is in good old Guelph, Ontario.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's cool. It's unfiltered. It's wild fermented. It's a little, what could I call that? Maybe more tart, maybe more sour than your average cider, but it's got that funkiness that people talk about.
It seems like there are a ton of cider options right now in Ontario. Would you say that these ciders have descended?
Yes, but I would make sure to say it while the ciders were nearby and could hear me talking about them in the third person.
The inside joke of all inside jokes.
Yes. The one person who would appreciate it, other than you, is me, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, sorry, you didn't tell me anything about it other than its part. Is there anything else to say about it?
I don't think so. It's quite good. I don't know. I kind of, when I bought it, I expected it to be like more like, whoa, this is crazy. It's made out of nectarines. But it does, I would say it's a cider. It falls into the cider category, but that's not a bad thing. Sure. It's not like wildly different. I wouldn't be able to pick it out of a lineup of ciders and not ciders.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Corey, I'm drinking a blueberry mint lime wheat beer from Wild Eye Brewing.
I briefly forgot that you sent me a picture, and I was actually very excited to hear you talk about this.
It is pretty interesting, actually.
Mike, will you talk about the color of that drink?
It's very blue. It's the color of a mashed blueberry, if that makes sense.
Yes.
You know how blueberry is like off blue, really, on the inside? And yeah, it's a wild color. And it really has a gradient throughout. Striations, if you will. A very, very light head. Every sip of it is different. Like you get the blueberry, you get the mint, you get the lime, but do you pick them out separately? Or at least I do. It's really interesting. I wouldn't drink a ton of these, but it's good.
Oh, cool. Have you ever had anything from that brewery? I don't recognize that brewery.
No. They're from North Vancouver. Oh, they're from a little town called North Vancouver. It's also vegan friendly. So despite that, it's quite good.
I'll just keep quiet about that. Oh, hey, what's your alcohol percentage on there, bro?
I've got a 5.4. I've got an OG of 11.6 and an FG of 1.5.
What the fuck are those?
I have no idea.
That's up to the employees of the Green Dragon to tell us when we order it.
Yeah, the service in here isn't great.
Excuse me, what's the IBU on this? Nothing.
I looked it up. It's an original gangster, so...
Oh, fuck off. That is not it.
No, original gravity?
What? That makes even less sense.
The number of dissolved sugars in the beer that can be converted into alcohol?
Wait, has this replaced IBU? We moved past it?
And then there's Final Gravity. Okay, it's what just like, fuck? it's really like high level marine terms.
Kind of like that joke you made earlier. It's just really like inside.
Yeah, this is inside baseball for brewers. So I guess if you're a real beer nerd, like the kind that discussed beer on a podcast, you would know what those terms meant.
Oh, yeah. Those people seem cool.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about the episode.
Yeah, speaking of things that we talk about on the internet. Oh, yeah, it's episode 4 of The Rings of Pooer. I got a nice summary for us here, Mike.
Oh, do you?
Yes, surprisingly. This is very fun because this episode has the same name as one of our chapter episodes from a little while back, and that's A Chilling Vision of Things to Come. So let's see. Isildur found out that the sea is in fact always right. Galadriel continued to piss off the Numenoreans until she pissed them off just right, until she became almost bros with the Queen Regent. She looks into the local Palantir and sees Doom, obviously. What else would she see? And then as she is leaving Numenor, it just happens to be a cold autumn morning and everyone takes a couple of leaves falling from a tree as some sort of sign from the gods. I was doing air quotes there, by the way, Mike. So Numenor is now going to Middle Earth for fucking war and shit. And since they are headed straight to the Southlands, we can't forget what was going on there with our friend Arondir. He was having some trouble while he was still being held by the orcs. He meets some weirdo named Adar, who is maybe not who you think he is or something. And he wants Arondir to go back to the people who are hiding in the Watchtower and tell them that if they swear loyalty to orcs and evil and shit, they will be spared. Even though he's on this special mission, orcs do try to murder him on his way back. And they also try to get back that fucked up blood sword the kid has. And the old fucker that the kid stole the sword from in the first place turns out to be some sort of Sauron pervert. Back to the dwarves, fucking finally. The tower is coming along very nicely. But where is Durin at these days? So Elrond goes back to Khazad-dûm to find him, only to find that the dwarves have discovered a new ore. Mithril, it's called, don't you know? But it is perilous to mine. Air quotes again. So the mine under the Miromir seems like a fairly stupid idea, to mine under their most sacred lake and like pilgrimage spot, and also they're mining under a fucking lake. But anyhow, the mine under the Miromir partially collapses. No one dies, but the king puts a stop to that particular venture, and Durin decides to go back to Lindon with Elrond to sneak some peeks at this tower. No hobbits. Mike, what notes do you have?
Well, Corey, my first note, no hobbits, 2 out of 20.
20 is a very large scale and they score very low.
No hobbits, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Did you notice that the old Sauron pervert, he kind of alluded to the fact that the comet everyone saw signified the coming of Sauron?
Yes. I think that is the big red herring in the season.
I think so too. I think people are going to be like, oh, that old wizard is obviously Sauron, but I don't think it is. I think it's just like a wizard was sent to Middle Earth at the same time that Sauron would appear, you know? Like,
yes. Yeah, I agree. I'm still pretty firm in my beliefs that it's Gandalf. But like,
I think it's some sort of Gandalf or some sort of... can we still call him Scamdalf?
Yes, actually we can.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, didn't see those guys at all this episode. That was kind of sad, but we're led to believe that he's a bad guy now.
Yeah, I guess it's supposed to sow doubt in our minds and hearts. Yeah. Because he killed those fireflies or whatever.
And I guess if they had shown that story progressing, maybe we would know for sure he wasn't evil.
Likely, yeah, because he was becoming sort of like friendlier by the minute. and I think also by the minute it's becoming like more and more silly for it to be anyone but Gandalf.
Yeah. He just needs to hit himself on a chandelier just to prove it.
Oh my God. Yeah, that will probably happen. Prediction number one. I think, yeah, I don't know. I guess the angle is like, if it's Sauron, this is why he doesn't count halflings, because he met them and he thinks they're dumb, which I don't think is a very good idea. Or it's Gandalf, and this is why he does like halflings. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to be wrong, but it's Gandalf. Scamdalf.
I'm pretty sure it's Gandalf, because Sauron wouldn't have forgotten the existence of hobbits.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the thing. It's like, yeah, why would they not end up in his calculations if he had like met them firsthand and you know, pretended to lose his memory, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Good note, Mike. Good solid note.
What do you got? Throw one at me.
Okay, something that I don't think fully hit home with me until this episode, and perhaps many people as well, the haters, if you will, possibly haven't realized this. I think this show was written for people who have seen the movies, and I don't think it was written for people who have read the books.
Or at least people who haven't read The Silmarillion.
Yeah, or the appendices.
I agree. Yeah, it is to the movies what the appendices are to the books, kind of. You're right in that regard.
I never quite realized it before, because I've been like tempted with a few things, like when a character comes up, I'm like, oh, I know that name, I want to like look it up and refresh my memory on it, but I've been trying not to do that, because it's just going to remind me more how much they're deviating from the books, and then it won't shut up that little part of my brain.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're Amazon, it's kind of easy to think, like, in terms of people that go to see the movies, or like nerds that read The Silmarillion and the appendices, it's easy to see which one you can make more money off of, and so therefore who to appeal to.
Yeah. So would you say that reading the appendices at this point to cross-reference would just be a recipe for strong gravy?
Yes, it would. It would lead to dwarven anger lasting longer than elven memory. There were good quotes in this episode.
Yeah. I don't know if I like them or hate them. But they're definitely there. You could attribute any of them to Bilbo's father and we'd agree, or we would probably think it true, right?
I almost wish that they like continue so that like in thousands of years in the show there will be Bilbo's father, old Bungo, and he'll actually start saying things that
like every other line is just an old saying that he's lifted from somewhere.
Yeah, just dialogue from the first season.
Okay, Corey.
Yes.
This one's a bit of a silly one. You should steal Barazhan's look, the Chancellor. I think with some beard and hair growing, you could do it. I'll steal his underling's look. His name's Kemmons. Or Kemmons. You know, the guy who's chasing Skirt.
Yes, yeah, the one who was approximately 30 years his younger.
Yeah, I could pull off his hair and facial hair, and you could pull off the Chancellor's hair and facial hair.
I hope you're talking about either A, cosplay, or B, upcoming Halloween, because
sure. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, Mike, and maybe I wouldn't get this personal on the show normally, but since you brought it up, I've been thinking the last few days that I'm getting quite self-conscious of the amount of gray hair that I have. And fuck you for bringing this up.
I would say that the Farazhan, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Sure.
he has some noble gray hair, Corey, so you don't need to be worried.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It is pretty noble. He's got like a Babylonian thing going on.
Yeah, it's a great look. drinks all around, I say.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That brings up a note of mine. I got the sense that they're going for a bit of a Sodom and Gomorrah decadence angle with Numenor.
Ooh.
I don't know. Just hints of it. Like they're all just kind of like they all get angry, and then they're like, let's just have drinks, and drinks are just like passed around on the streets, and like, I don't know.
So you think when the Queen Regent leaves, it's just going to turn into an elven fuckfest? That's when we're finally going to get the orgy.
Well, I think so. Yeah, but then again, that's what happened in the books, so I don't know if it'll happen on the show.
They're really. I hope this is how you pronounce his name, Farazhan, the Chancellor. They're really playing his character quite well. I like it. He's the man of the people. He's trying to do best for his people. Like, he's not all bad, but we, the show watchers, don't agree with him, because we know the elves aren't bad.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. It's all very well acted.
Excuse me, knowing what is going to happen with him. Spoiler. It's kind of neat to see that he's like a man of the people, and they mention like he knows everybody's name, it seems, and he's just able to like calm a rioting crowd.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cool. Like,
and bring them on the queen's side about her going to Middle Earth with a conquering army.
Yeah, yeah. Question: maybe this is a side note. What you we know what happens to him? Do we know that character?
Yeah, I think he's responsible for the Numenoreans turning against the elves and sailing to Valar.
Oh shit! Oh okay.
Which leads to the great flood that we saw at the beginning of this episode.
Yes. Yeah. The
he's. I don't think he's directly responsible, but like his descendants are. In this take, it will probably be him directly responsible.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. No, that's fair. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Thank you for cleaning that up for me.
This is. I haven't read Silmarillion in like 15 years, so this is like. Vague memory, but it seems that's what I think that's what he is. I think like maybe his child or like his children's children become the ones who actually take everyone to Valar.
Okay, yeah, interesting.
To attack and gain immortality.
Yeah, I'm not a god yet.
It's interesting that the Numenoreans in this show want workers' rights and they don't want their gerbs taken by the elves, and in the book they would just want immortality.
Oh yeah, that's fair. Actually, that's a note that I had. I am actually really enjoying the sort of like continuing commentary from the mortal races about the immortality of the elves.
Like, yeah, they do mention it quite a bit, and it's kind of, yeah, it puts the elves in their place a little.
And it's interesting to see like the perspective of it, because like imagine you know shared the earth with something that was immortal, that'd be like pretty fucked up.
They're like your leading race too. Like they kind of. You know, they look at themselves as the caretakers of everybody.
Yeah.
They make decisions on such a slow process. It's imagine the ants were running things.
Bura room. Yeah, that's a nice continuing thread of the story.
Yeah, oh, I hope the elves get a thumb in the eye over it.
Well, yeah, it's I don't know if it's like fear or if it is like they're disgusted by it or they're jealous of it, but yeah, the other races don't appreciate how elves are immortal.
Well, Durin was pretty direct in his opinion. Like, it didn't seem like a long time for you, but 20 years is a big deal for us.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. That's some nice unexplored territory.
Speaking of elves, Corey, Galadriel is none too subtle. That's one of my notes.
I have a similar note about Galadriel and Galadriel's character. I was starting to feel that her character was a little single note.
Yeah, she is a hammer and everything is a nail.
Yes, yeah, that's a very good analogy. Yeah, and it's not even the acting either. Like, I still assert that I really like this actor. I feel like the way that the character is written is just like everything is like you said, a nail, and you just gotta
hopefully. You know what, if it's interesting, because if they wrote a male character like that, a lot of people wouldn't have issue with it at all.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's kind of a trope, you know, your strong male who just like busts through everything and does things his own way.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But knowing Galadriel becomes the schemer she does, it's hopefully they're leaving a lot of room for character growth.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. Yeah, like, yeah, the first episode it was like it was great, and then like, yes, 2 and 3 I was like, you really have to, like, yeah, you're like this in every scene. And then yeah, it seemed like it was starting to change a bit in this episode.
Yeah, it I think it's 5 seasons we have.
Yeah, I kept thinking that, Mike. That's in my mind every time I'm watching it now.
So maybe this whole season she's going to be a bit of a dink, and then she slowly learns like there's a better way to do things. She needs to be under someone else's tutelage.
Well, yeah, maybe this is an unfortunate choice by Amazon, but the male character Halbrand showed her how to have a bit of a change of mind. Like, you got to be careful what you do when the whole world is watching you, like waiting for you to slip up.
Halberin mansplained.
Yeah, enough. Yep, exactly. You said you had a few notes left, Mike.
Yeah, okay. This was a dwarf heavy episode and I loved it. And the dwarves are the best part of the show so far. What do you think?
I fully agree. I wrote, for me, the best depiction of anything in this show is that dwarvish shit.
I wrote that dwarf shit too.
Yes.
I love how Durin is just like kind of disgusting.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. They let their imagination go with the dwarves and it's so good.
Yeah. It might be the best dwarves ever on screen.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
They're very like gruff too, but also lovable.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it was cool to see the sounding, or no, I guess it wasn't a sounding ceremony. It was a prayer to the rocks, but like kind of neat, man.
Yeah. It had like throat singing kind of feel.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, if only they didn't treat the elves so poorly.
Poor old Elrond.
Wait, do you have another note?
I do, yes, Mike. I have a fucked up tidbit for you here.
Okay.
So I know I mentioned I didn't want to look stuff up, but I decided to search through my Mathem House notes for the word Adar, because I was curious. It was like there was a little ping in my mind of like, Adar, what is Adar? Who is Adar? I'm sure that's come up before. And the only time, Mike, it was used, the only fucking time in my like 50 page document from Lord of the Rings so far, was in my notes about Tom fucking Bombadil.
Shut up.
For real, man, one of his many names from before the Third Age was Iarwain Ben Adar.
Well, we know that's not him, so.
No, we know it's him now. Mike, you were right. And you and the crackpot who said he was the ultimate evil were both right.
If he was Tom Bombadil, man.
just killing orcs. I don't know. It very much surprised me. And then I thought maybe Bezos's angle on this entire series was to like, you know, slander Tom Bombadil once and for all in Tolkien lore.
So my next note was...
I would like to note for the record that you didn't want to talk about this.
My next note was, what is Adar?
Oh, right, sorry. I thought that was you just brushing me off.
No, I'm very curious. What is he actually?
I got the sense that maybe he was a half, or maybe not fully ruined elf.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. Like, they're calling him father. Is he, because Adar means father, or they were calling him father?
Yeah.
Is he one of the original elves that were perverted?
That's what I'm kind of assuming.
Yeah, is this where, like, the elves learn that orcs are perverted elves?
Oh my god, imagine they didn't know that. That would be fucked up.
Yeah, I could see like that being hidden from them, because why would their leaders tell them that they're fighting kind of their own kin?
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. Oh, yeah, that's an interesting angle to it. I was thinking that was cool because like, yeah, that's an angle that hasn't been explored, because the orcs are just sort of shown as like hordes of mindless monsters.
Yeah, but in this episode, they weren't. They actually cared about the death of one of their own.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So we agree that he might be a partly ruined elf.
Yeah, I think so. Ruined. I think that's what he is. Yeah, he one of maybe the original elves before they bred them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, before the original orc queen, singular. But yeah, that is an interesting angle, like, because all elves are always like of the same mind of don't wreck things, Sauron's evil, etc. But imagine you ended up on the wrong side of that.
Yeah.
A couple thousand years later.
He's kind of lost out there, isn't he?
Yeah.
And probably it'll be interesting. They could do a lot with that character. Like, has he been rejected by the elves? Has he looked to them for help and they're like disgusted by him now?
And I think Beleriand that they were talking about no longer exists at this point, because I think in the war with Morgoth, it's like the northern part of Middle Earth, and it's like completely eradicated. I think
the war of Sudden Flame, maybe. Yeah, my last note, Corey, is we got to see some sketching this episode finally.
we did finally see some sketching. I was actually thinking about that. I didn't make a note of it, but it was funny that she was just like looking and like smiling and just being so pleased with herself. I was like, I don't think that's how most people sketch.
No, there's a lot more like grumbling, frowning,
or like genuine focus at the very least. We mentioned briefly that like just some dude came along and was like, who's this lady?
Yeah.
She's got
his name's Kemmons.
Your Halloween character.
Yeah. He also was somehow related to the Chancellor. I can't remember, but I think he's like his underling in some way.
Yeah, I thought maybe he was his son, but yeah, underling's fine with me.
No, we can't go for Halloween with as father and son. That's not good.
I already told you I didn't want to do it.
Well, now it's not happening for sure. What's your next note?
I might be running out of notes. I've got a brief one that it's used pretty sparingly, but a couple of times they've done like slow-mo with the orcs, like of just like a shot of the orcs. It's cool. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. They're showing a lot of they're showing off their prosthetics and like the confidence in the orc special effects.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little thumbing their nose at Peter Jackson for the Hobbit movies.
Which is fair.
Yeah. But they're also using it for like to give gravity to the orcs and what they're doing and like their personal feelings about things, which is not done anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is nice.
Speaking of slow motion, remember when What's-His-Pickle grabbed that arrow out of the air and saved that kid and then flipped it around and shot an orc with it?
Yes.
That was cool.
That was cool, yeah.
Oh, I guess I didn't have this note, but like, what do you think that sword is?
I don't know. That's a very good question. That sword seems like very important in like the refinding of Sauron.
Yeah, and Theo... it's a bit of a creep too. I mean, there are a couple scenes where he just has this like kind of Gollum-y voice going on.
Yeah. Him and his buddy are both a little off, but like
his buddy Rowan. His name is Rowan.
Yeah.
Theo. His name Theo is the kid, right?
Yep. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I feel like he could go either way. He could become evil and that would be interesting. Or maybe that's a red herring, another one.
Yeah, I feel like they kind of have to do that a bunch, which I think we mentioned last episode. But what do you think the sword is, Mike? Do you have thoughts on that?
I have no idea. Like when it touches blood, it becomes an actual sword. And Adar wants it. The orcs want it.
Yeah, I wonder if that symbol that they keep finding places. I don't know. Does Adar and those orcs, do they have that symbol? Like maybe they don't know where they're supposed to go yet?
I don't know. Maybe that sword makes somebody become like a general in the army or something.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe Adar wants it to lead the orcs in like a stronger way. Maybe, I don't know, or lead more orcs or...
you know, unite the orcs? I don't know. Yeah. I hope it's not like actually Sauron. Like I hope he's not like... in the sword somehow.
Yeah, like takes over a person. I'd hate that.
Yeah. He's got a... I don't know. Well, yeah, I don't want to get too caught up in, like I said, the book stuff. I was going to say, he's got to befriend Celebrimbor and pervert his mind.
Yeah, so he can't just show up as like this evil thing. He's like the great deceiver, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's another underlying red herring of like who's deceiving what. Oh, and what did Durin think that the elves were hiding? I don't know, man.
Oh,
nobody trusts nobody.
No, there's a lot of distrust. Okay, here's a last note, last question. Do you think we're going to see Sauron turn into a werewolf?
I don't think so, no. I think that's getting overly complicated.
But it's in the text.
A lot of stuff is in the text.
Doesn't he turn into a werewolf and fight Huron's hound or something?
Yeah. Is that the first age? I think that is the first age. Yeah, Morgoth is still hanging out by that point.
Yeah, but man.
It would be cool. Maybe he's that dog. That dog that's all angry.
Oh, the dog?
No, he's not the dog.
No.
Yeah.
The crazy warg.
The Chihuahua warg.
Yeah. So I think that's it for us. Right?
I think so. Let me ask you a closing question then, Mike.
Yeah.
Are you still enjoying the show?
I think so. I found this episode very ponderous, if that makes sense. I'm waiting for something to happen. It seems like we've been watching the chessboard be set up for four episodes.
Yeah. Not a lot progressed, really.
No, it's like okay. Like I need something.
What did you think of the leaves falling from the white tree?
I think it's an interesting take on the doom of Numenor. It's maybe a little bit too obvious to make a Palantir be like the source of misunderstanding again.
Yeah,
but like I think that is a thing from the book, and it's interesting. Like, couldn't they see those leaves falling and be like, okay, reverse course, we're going the wrong way. Made a mistake.
Well, I guess that's what they did, isn't it? Because they were like, we'll send Galadriel away. And then the tree was like, you fucked up somehow.
Oh, yeah. But I think that was, they sent Galadriel away, but they also at the same time were planning on going with her. It was like a fake out for us.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, actually, I guess it was interesting because there were sort of two, maybe these are more red herrings, but like two instances of like maybe the good guys leading to all the trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Galadriel being the cause of the Great Wave and Elrond swearing he won't tell anyone about Mithril, otherwise it will mean sadness for his people on Middle-earth. It's like, they sure get that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But they do mine a lot of Mithril in the meantime.
Yes.
And the Great Forge, have they explained why they're building it yet?
No, they haven't touched on that, I don't believe.
Just the Celebrimbor? Just that he wants to build something great, like Fëanor, who is generally thought to be a piece of shit.
Yep. Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
Huh.
Okay. Well, yeah. I think we've covered it.
I think so.
Tune in next week for our next episode of episode four, but it's actually episode five. Of That Hobbit Shit Presents, a very special episode of That Hobbit Shit Presents, The Rings of Pur, episode 5. This happens to me every so often, Mike, that I forget our outro.
We'll blame it on Bezos. They had to double up episodes in the first episode.
It's really throwing us off. And his hatred of Tom Bombadil has just enraged me. You can find us on Instagram at That Hobbit Shit. You can find us on Twitter at Hobbit Shit. Email us. Hey, are you enjoying the show? Do you hate it? I don't know. Tell us. thathobbitshit@gmail.com, patreon.com/thathobbitshit. We have merch, bros. Thank you to our Patreon supporters, Jeremy, Nicole, Judy, and thanks for listening. See you next time. I'm Corey.
I'm Mike.
And may the hair on your toes never fall out.